This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Ted Alexandro has been a comedian for more than 20 years, came up in the New York comic scene, and has appeared on The Late Show with David Letterman, Conan, and Inside Amy Schumer, among many, many more. When he's not doing stand-up, Ted is active in social justice movements. He also finds a way to incorporate his activism and his political beliefs into his comedy.
Sometimes people will profess to be supportive of gay rights or gay marriage, but they do it in a way that doesn't really sound supportive. They'll be like, yeah, who cares? Just marry whoever you want. I don't need to know. Who cares? That's not really supportive. Have you ever gone to a wedding and given the bride and groom a card that says, who cares?
Ted Alexandro on Conan in 2014. Ted Alexandro performs tomorrow night at DSI Comedy Theater in Chapel Hill, but first joins me on the program. Hello, Ted.
Hi there.
Let's talk about your comedy. Let's get serious about this for a minute, Ted.
All right, let's do it.
Have you always incorporated politics into your routines?
I haven't. I've been a comedian for coming up on 25 years, and I would say the first maybe 10 years or so, I was more kind of observational, just things that occurred in my own personal life. But the older I got, and I think maybe 9/11 kind of was another pivot point for me, where I just started engaging more in the things that were going on in the world. And then, you know, just as I got older, Occupy Wall Street, I got involved with Black Lives Matter. So, you know, activism became part of my life offstage, and more I found myself incorporating it on stage.
Is it different? Is the joke writing different between sort of those observational kinds of that kind of comedy and political comedy? Any difference?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because the stakes are higher and I think the target is smaller. When you're talking about something like, you know, whether it's gay marriage, it's less so now, but police brutality, things of this nature, the target is smaller and people listen a little differently. If you're just talking about your relationship or your job or, you know, just things that everyone can relate to, generally speaking, people listen with less, their defenses aren't up. But certain words in certain markets, certain audiences for that matter, their back will get up. So you have to, you know, especially as a comedian, the target is to make people laugh. So I'm not just up there to talk about issues. I'm there to figure out how I can do it comedically.
Well, let's hear how you do that on one of the very issues you mentioned, police brutality.
Even talking about police brutality is uncomfortable. But at least it's not police brutality. Imagine what that must feel like. Better than that. Maybe that should be the new program. The cops just come up and talk to black people about police brutality. Black people are like, this is really uncomfortable. Yeah, but we have scaled back.
Comedian Ted Alexandro in 2015. He will perform tomorrow at DSI Comedy in Chapel Hill. Do you worry when you write that joke and it goes on from there? I mean, do you sort of fret as you type, or how does that work for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I fret more as I perform it, you know. The writing, yeah. The writing is the solitary act, usually done in a quiet space. But I'll flesh things out more on stage. And that particular joke, in fact, the line that you just played kind of just came out on stage one night. I've learned over the years to kind of, you know, structure the joke and find the beats. And then from there, go up on stage and see what happens and see if your brain in the moment can latch on to some things that surprise you. Because I think that's the real fun in comedy, because when you're surprised, you know, certainly the audience will be as well.
Well, I mean, you took it to a deeper level of self-awareness there. You said, okay, I could tell a joke about police brutality, but now I'm going to tell you that talking about it to you is something that's going to make you uncomfortable, and somehow crafted that into a joke, a successful joke.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, it's hard to do, you know, and it's not fun all the time. But like I allude to in the joke, you know, like, but at least it's not police brutality. You know, like, talking about it is the least we can do, you know. And in the circles that I'm in, whether it's artists, comedians, activists, we do talk about these things. So it's not something frivolous for me. It's the things that I'm thinking about and talking about. So it only stands to reason that a portion of it should be in my act as well. And again, like, for me, it's important that it does land somewhere funny. I don't want it to be dogmatic or preachy. I want it to be, you know, something edifying or, you know, but definitely funny.
Well, I've learned quite a bit on this show already. In my previous segment, I learned that comic books can be dangerous, and now I learned that comedy is not always fun. So this has been this show has upended me, honestly. But
yeah.
It's true. And talk about the role of comedy, because, I mean, obviously the role of the satirist goes back to the court jester, and probably long before that, that comedy and politics have long been partners together because, you know, power has a way of exceeding its bounds, and something and somebody has to bring them back, and comics have always had that liminal state that they've been allowed to say the things that others can't say. So it's not new. But I'm wondering if you have a sense that these days in particular, comedy is playing a kind of a heightened role in political awareness.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's so much a part of the discourse, no matter where you are, whether it's just casual conversation or in the media. And certainly in the arts and in comedy. So, you know, for me, I've been talking about these types of things for, you know, many years. But it is interesting to see that really across the board, even comedians that I work with who never really dabbled in political comedy, everyone's got at least a couple of mm-hmm. political jokes now. But yeah, for me, personally speaking, it is a very ripe season for kind of figuring out how to make sense of it and parse through it comedically. You know, it's again, it's a tightrope because really when you get to the root of it, whether you're talking about police brutality or politics or policy that's being said, a lot of times you're talking about tragic consequences or even deadly consequences. So, you know, to do it in a frivolous way, depending on the topic, sometimes you can find something lighthearted, certainly. But other times you're talking about things that have dire consequences. So it is a tightrope, and it is a personal choice for each comedian. Right. Like, how much do you want to delve into it?
Dire consequences and cut close to the bone. Not only can you possibly offend political sensibilities, but certainly in the United States, and I think elsewhere around the globe, religion and politics are very closely linked, and you take that on as well. Let's listen to this clip.
Some people say homosexuality is a sin. It's not. God is perfectly cool with it. God feels the same exact way about homosexuality as God feels about heterosexuality. Now, you might say, whoa. Slow down. You move too fast. How could you have the audacity, the temerity, to speak on behalf of God? Exactly. That's an excellent point. And I pray that you remember it.
Ted Alexandro on The Late Show with David Letterman. That was in 2011. Going to be performing tomorrow at DSI Comedy in Chapel Hill. And my guest on The State of Things right now. I mean, I guess that's true. You know, if you're going to talk about politics, you can't not talk about religion, at least not in this country, right?
Yeah. They definitely intersect. And for me, I do like to, you know, anything that's a little too precious or that maybe is there's a degree of hypocrisy behind it, kind of gets my back up and gets my gears turning to try to figure out, like, is there some comedic fodder there? And certainly the gay marriage issue was, you know, is the perfect intersection of that. So, yeah, it's fun when you can kind of, you know, things coalesce and you make a point. I don't start out wanting to make a point, but I kind of work backwards from the feeling of this bothers me and how can I articulate it.
We've played a couple of clips of you on various television programs, and I wonder if you choose which material to do based on the medium you're working on, whether you're in a club or on television. Do you make choices like that?
Yeah, to a certain extent you do. I think the longer my career has gone on, I try to do less of that, and I try not to think about, well, I'm in this market or I'm in this space, so let me cater to this. You know, there's always a certain amount of that. But I think what makes it interesting is doing the stuff that scares you a little bit. And, you know, I used to do like some storytelling shows, or I would do the regular comedy clubs, and I would kind of have different sets for each. But as I went along, I said, you know, I think it's more challenging and more fun to kind of just do my thing, and I'll get better as a comic, and my voice will emerge more if I'm kind of true to what I want to do regardless of the space.
Let's talk a little bit more about your work in social justice movements. As you said, as you got older and realized the stakes were higher, you became more involved, including your involvement in Moral Mondays here in North Carolina a couple of years ago. Tell us about the activism and sort of how you get involved in that, and sort of what drew you to not just be a witness and an observer, but in fact an activist.
Well, it was a very organic process. You know, I would point to Occupy Wall Street. I went down to Zuccotti Park a couple of days after Occupy Wall Street started. I had read about it in the paper and immediately was drawn to what was going on there. It was just people speaking the truth, and it was an eye-opener for me, and it really kind of awakened something that I guess had been dormant and needed expression for me personally. So it was very gratifying to plug into that network and participate. So then that continued with Black Lives Matter. And as you mentioned, I went down with some activist friends to Moral Mondays to see what that was about. And that was also fascinating and great to see the organizing that's going on down there. So really it's, you know, it just feeds me to see the people that are doing the work, you know, because it's kind of thankless work in a lot of ways, organizing and protesting, certainly. But it's creating the headlines that would otherwise be absent.
There you go. You're generating your own material. Nice job. well, and not only that, but you were doing the work at a different level, because back in the early 2000s, you started to actively work for wage increases for comedians in New York City. Tell us about that process.
I did, yeah. That was kind of an organic outgrowth of just conversations that were going on in the comedy community in New York. There was a lot of grumbling because there had been no pay increase for comics in New York since the mid-80s. So, you know, I was a relatively young comic, less than 10 years in. But I just decided, since I was repeatedly having these conversations, I decided to write up a petition asking the New York clubs for a raise, and I got over 100 comics to sign it. You know, this was pre-social media, so it was a lot of kind of boots on the ground organizing, just walking around to clubs and getting folks to sign it. And we wound up getting a pay increase on two separate occasions. So, yeah, that was kind of, in a strange way, that was like my introduction to activism, just because, again, it was an outgrowth of something that mattered to me.
Tell us about the scene in New York. You grew up there, born and raised in Queens, came up in that scene. What does that environment look like? I guess in some ways that becomes a classroom. You get to see great comedians on off nights and during the week where they're kind of working out their material, huh? And those of us who don't live there maybe don't get to see that. We only get to see the polished version.
Yes. You know, it's both daunting at times when you're starting and like you alluded to, it's a classroom, you know, because you're watching, from the time I started, you're watching the likes of Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, Jon Stewart, Louis C.K., Judy Gold, all these great longtime veteran comics. So even when you're beginning and you're just sitting in the back of the club, you're learning, you know, things that can't really be quantified. And then, of course, the stage time that you eventually get, all of that kind of, you know, incorporates into your own voice. So for me, you know, some people say, like, how do you start in New York? It must be overwhelming. But I was from here, so, you know, I can't really compare it to anywhere else. But I wouldn't change it for anything to have had the opportunity of watching all these, you know, these genius comics.
Especially in their earlier days. Tell us how you got into this in the first place.
Well, it was a bit of a winding road. I had been involved in the arts from the young age. I was playing the piano. It was funny because I took piano lessons from the time I was six, and when it rained at school, they would have me play for the students during lunchtime if we couldn't go outside. Mm-hmm. So those were like my earliest gigs, was entertaining like hundreds of elementary school kids.
And obviously you're now part of the worst memories of kids who couldn't go out and only remember hearing you play while the rain fell.
That's true, playing the theme to Charlie Brown.
Over and over.
Right. But yeah, I was always drawn to the arts, doing plays, doing theater. In college, I did sketch comedy. Then I did a two-man act. When I graduated, we would go around to open mics, my friend Hollis James and I. And then eventually, I just started doing it on my own.
You taught for a while and now have co-created a web series called Teacher's Lounge. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was kind of, born of my teaching days. I taught for 5 years in New York City public schools, K through five. So that was my day job while I was first starting out doing comedy. And I created this web series, Teacher's Lounge, where I play the music teacher, and my friend Hollis James, with whom I co-created Teacher's Lounge, he plays the janitor. And we're always just hanging out in the Teacher's Lounge, wasting time, and then different comedians come in playing faculty members. So we had everyone from Jim Gaffigan playing the school nutritionist, Judy Gold is the gym teacher, Dave Attell was the school photographer, Todd Barry the librarian. So it was just kind of a great way to showcase all of my comedian friends acting as teachers.
Great stuff. Thanks so much for talking with us, Ted Alexandro. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ted Alexandro performs tomorrow at DSI Comedy in Chapel Hill. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton, Ormond, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is the technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.